Yo. Hey guys, welcome back to another amazing edition of the Best Practices Show podcast. I love my job. You know why? Because I get to meet the coolest people in this amazing industry called dentistry. And they get to share their stories and their thoughts and their insights. And on the podcast, we share them to help you improve your practice in your life. And recently, we had Dr. Lenny Hess from the Dawson Academy here in our office. He was conducting a Dawson Center training. And there were so many young dentists here starting that journey. And I thought, Lenny, let's sit down and talk about this. What transforms a dentist's career? And he said, it's getting around the right people, finding the right mentors. And I couldn't agree more. So here's a little bit of our conversation and what we talked about. Please listen up. Hope you guys enjoy this, and we'll see you soon. Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show podcast. I got a very special episode. Guess who's in the house? Dr. Lenny Hess from the Dawson Academy's in the house. Cheers, brother.
Hey, everybody. How you doing?
Cheers, man.
Cheers over here. I've got a nice Miller High Life, the champagne of beers. What a better way to kick off a little time in Milwaukee than to get right to the heart of the product.
It's awesome, brother. Good to see you, man. Thanks for being here. Really appreciate it.
Wonderful to be here. I always enjoy every time I come to Milwaukee to hang out with you guys. It's always a good time.
Yeah. So we're going to take you guys on a journey if you're listening. And this is not Lenny's first stop in Milwaukee. You guys have done this a couple times here where you have the Dawson Academy courses here, which we'll get to in a second. The Dawson Academy, if you've been listening to the podcast, is a very important journey in my life. Dr. Peter Dawson, who I met at the age of 24, believe it or not, I went to see...
24?
24! I went to see...
What were you doing there?
Okay, so I was 24, he was 64. I'm so glad you asked. So I had a mentor of mine say, you're going to go see this 64-year-old dentist speak. And I'm like, I don't need to see some 64. Now here's how this all works. If any of you have 20-some-year-old kids, they don't take your advice easily. They go, no, I got it all figured out. When you're in your 20s, you have it all figured out. Well, you don't. And then I went to see this guy who was 64. And I'm like, this guy's an old dentist. Like, what is he going to teach me? I know what I'm doing. It changed my life. It was called How to Put Your Practice in the Top 10%. I'm going to bring it for you. I still have the original manual that he gave us with all of my original notes. It blew me away and it actually shook me because it was more of a values exercise. I never heard a man talk about stuff like that in a way that he did. Like, he really impressed me. And at the break, I told him, Dr. Dawson, I did not want to be here. And he's like, well, where are you from? And I flew all the way from Scottsdale. He's like, from Scottsdale? Why? And he's like, I was told to be here. He invited me to sit at his table that first day. And I was like amazed. And now it wasn't just him and I, but it was like 10 other dentists. And from then, it shaped my experience in dentistry. I actually wrote him a letter. Guess what he did?
He sent you a note.
He sent me a note back from the desk. How many of these do you have? Like the little note cards from Dr. Peter Dawson?
I've got about a half dozen of them.
I only have two of them. So, I
remember when I got my first one. I remember the first time that Pete actually knew my name.
Tell me when.
I was at a conference. And he was speaking there, and in the hotel, I was walking down the hallway towards him, and he was walking towards me, and I was like, oh no, what do I do? Do I say hi or whatever? And then he was about 20 feet away. He goes, hey, Lenny. And my first instinct, I turned around, and I was like, I can't believe there's another Lenny here right now. How crazy is that? I don't run into a lot of Lennies. And
that's awesome.
Like, I can't believe that Pete actually knew my name. I mean, he was the biggest thing in dentistry, still in many ways is. I mean, still the best-selling author in dentistry is textbooks. Nobody has eclipsed that. And it's unlikely anybody ever will, but... I'm so glad that you had that same opportunity. It touched your life in a very meaningful way.
Yeah, and he kept doing it. So I'll tell one last story, and then I want people to know your story. When Pete passed away at 89, it was not a good time for us as a family. We just had a lot going on. Like, and so I told my wife, I'm like, I have to go. Like, even if I'm flying down there, I'm coming back. So I had the tightest flight. So I flew down there. I was going to pay my respects no matter what. I waited in line forever. You were there, everybody was there. I stood in line from somebody who I think was from Japan. And I'm like, So how 22 hours. I go, I only flew 8, 22 hours to get here. I'm saying my respects and going back. That's how much this man meant to me. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And there will only be one of him. But it's so much fun to watch you do your thing and now lead the Dawson County. I want our listeners to know, who's Dr. Lenny S? Like, what do you do? And how did you get this role? So
it's been a crazy journey. I mean, when I kind of had the little seed planted in my brain that maybe I want to get into the educational side of dentistry, it actually was in dental school. So I went to Northwestern University, and back then it closed up since then, but the medical campus was right downtown there. And the apartment building that I lived in was right next door to the headquarters of the ADA building. So every Friday they would bring in some speaker that would be doing a full day lecture. And if I had the time, I could go to that for free. The Chicago Men Winter Meeting at that point in time was 4 days of clinical education. I could go to that for free. So just by happenstance of where I was doing my education, I was able to probably graduate with well over 150 hours of CE already. And the thing that happened was that it planted this seed in my brain that nothing these world-class educators were doing had anything to do with what I was being taught in dental school.
Wow.
So right away implanted in my brain that the first thing I need to do when I graduate is educate myself even more, because I graduated in 1999 with about $260,000 of student loan debt, which in today's dollars would be like $500,000.
Wow.
So all those dentists, if you're on this podcast right now and you're a young dentist and you're just buried in debt, I mean, I know exactly what that feels like. And you got to keep your head down and keep moving forward and it'll go away. But
yeah,
so that's where kind of that seed got planted in my brain. Now, the other thing that I noticed about these educators that were coming in is that they were, you know, they talk about in Hollywood, you're a triple threat. You can sing, you can dance, and you can act, right? Well, these people can do the dentistry, document the dentistry, write about it, and then they can, you know, you can captivate an audience of your peers that all have the same degree that you have. I mean, that's right. The hardest thing is when you're in a lecture, you can tell when somebody doesn't know their stuff, or you can tell if people are asking questions and things get uncomfortable. And, you know, what a privilege it is to be able to stand in the room of your peers, to be able to help guide them along and elevate their careers as well. But that's kind of how it started for me. So I started doing a lot of CE. I spent in the first 3 years of being in private practice, I'd probably spent another $100,000 on CE.
Right.
No. And I was broke. I mean, so this is all basically credit card debt that I was spending at that point in time.
Okay. So I think it's important. The listeners know you're in Charlotte. Did you started in Charlotte?
Yeah. So when I graduated from Northwestern, I grew up in the Midwest, Ohio, Indiana. I'd seen enough cold and snow in my lifetime. So I was like, well, I'm not going to get caught up in a state with bad weather anymore. I knew I had one shot to get this right. So I just packed up and moved to North Carolina.
And just, so did you do a scratch start? Were you an associate? Like, what happened?
Yeah. So I bought a practice right out of school. You know, okay. I was so broke that I couldn't afford to even think about being an associate because, like, say, for instance, if I would have stayed in Chicago at that point in time, then most associates were starting for about $88,000 to $90,000 a year at that point in time. And by the time I paid my student loans and you know, you're basically still eating peanut butter and ramen noodles again. And
right.
I just couldn't envision doing that. So I just took the ultimate plunge and purchased a practice right out of school. So my first day in private practice was my first day in my private practice. That guy walked out and I walked in, and I just feel real bad for those patients.
Yeah. All right. In current day, if you had to describe your practice, like, let's paint a picture. What's your practice today? What is it today?
So my practice today is a practice that is focused in on providing quality. And, you know, what my practice is providing is a niche in the market that when people want to be treated really well,
yeah,
and they want to be having their treatment done in a non-rushed environment where, you know, we only see one patient at a time. I'm not running around from room to room. That's kind of what my practice is like. So I see patients 2.5 days a week at this point after, you know, I'm in my 27th year of private practice. And that's what our goal is just to provide the best quality. And, you know, we talk about when we educate people at the Dawson Academy, we talk about creating a complete care dentist, basically a physician of the masculatory system. And so my practice is about 50%. What I would say is bread and butter general dentistry, doing single unit crowns. I do dentures and partials and implants and all that good stuff. And about 50% of my production every year are large prosthodontic style cases, full mouth rehabilitations, large implant cases, 20-unit veneer cases, those types of things.
Yeah. I think it's really important, what you just said, is the balance of the 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
And I first heard that from John Cranham, and I want you to expand on that because, yeah, he would say, like, anyone tells you, like, they're doing full mouth all day long. First of all, it's exhausting. Like,
it is.
And you need the aerobic and the focused. And so if I'm a young dentist listening, and can you couple this? You didn't start with that. Like people, and let me throw a third piece. Like you're not an exclusive area in Charlotte where you're serving the ultra rich.
No. I tell everybody that I'm a country dentist because my practice is in a county right adjacent to Mecklenburg where Charlotte is. And, you know, the primary economic output of the county that I practice in is chicken farming.
Wow.
And so it's, you know, I have my average family of four that comes in, they're, you know, they're getting by on probably $100,000 a year in a family of four. And these days is still people are struggling. So, you know, being a fee for service practice, you know, people are paying more and they have to see a reason to pay more. And so, no, you don't need to be in where the perception is of all the rich people are. People will always pay for quality. And one of the things that Dr. Dawson ingrained in me is the realization that people inherently want to do what's best for themselves.
Right.
But most dentists aren't giving people the opportunity to choose to do what's best. They're only doing, well, what will my insurance pay for? Or if I'm going to try to recommend treatment, which path do I think will have the least amount of resistance to where the patient will schedule because we're not busy next week or whatever that is. And that's just kind of a paradigm shift. And all you need in dentistry is you need a dental chair and a patient in the chair. And that gives you the opportunity to be in the people business.
Yeah. And go back to this, like the 50-50 balance.
Yeah.
You know, like how rewarding is that? Is it good mental health to have that balance? Like, because I think, and the reason I'm saying that, Lenny, is I get a chance to coach a lot of people and they can't see beyond what they're seeing right now.
Yeah.
You know, I have so many patients, like, I don't even know how to do this. Like doing a comprehensive exam the way Dr. Hess, like, how do I find time? So none of this happens overnight. But I think week over week, month over month, if you do it one patient at a time, like what's the Valhalla of dentistry for you or for anybody? Like give me a point of direction if I'm a young dentist.
Yeah, you know? Well, I think it's a personal choice. You know, one of the greatest things about dentistry is you have the opportunity to create your practice and mold it however you want it to be to support your life.
Right.
And that's one of the most important things is I see too many dentists that they're spending their life supporting their practice and your practice should be supporting your life.
Right.
And, you know, you have to find out what's important for you or, you know, do you want to be there to take your kids to school in the morning? Do you want to coach your kids' little league team? Do you want to be the soccer, you know, parent or whatever that is? And then you can craft your hours based on, you know, how it's going to support your life. But, you know, for me, when we go back to like, you know, gosh, you know, 50-50 is such a good balance for me. Well, it serves two purposes. Number one is it gives me the opportunity to make sure that when an economic downturn happens, which it's going to happen again, recessions are inevitable. I think I've lived through three or four of them already in my career. And another one's coming. I don't know when it's going to be, but there will be another recession. And when that point in time happens, now you have a general dentistry side that is supporting you and pays all your bills and you make a good income from, because a lot of times when it comes to people writing you a $25,000, $30,000, or $50,000 check for something bigger and better, then a lot of times people are insecure when the economics aren't really good. So
yeah,
not only that, but like you were saying, it's, you know, it's so great. Cause I was, you know, looking at Facebook and the airplane flying up here and you know, I get all these ads, dentists, are you whatever? And there's like, they're throwing money around and everything. And this one company is like, well, if you aren't doing 15 arches a month and you know, then you're a turd. And I'm thinking I could not even possibly do 15 big cases in a month and do a good job. It would be absolutely impossible because to learn to do a very large case correctly, there is such an intense process that you have to go through from a diagnosis to the treatment plan to working it out in the provisionals and then using those provisionals as the blueprint for the final restorations. If I get beyond basically three or four big cases in a month, I'm exhausted. It takes a lot of mental energy to manage these cases. It's a tremendous responsibility because, you know, I think so many times dentists become desensitized to the privilege that they put us in to be able to permanently change their body. And I mean, it takes so much courage for a patient to lay down in that chair and let us do what we need to do. There's no way I could ever do 15 times in 1 month. I would be a cripple in a hospital because my back and neck would be contorted into a shape that no one could recognize. I'd look like, remember when Prince changed his name to a symbol? I would look like that symbol.
Yeah. And so, well, I'm older now. I'm 55. And I think this is just an amazing profession. I think one of the things that bugs me the most is the BS, like fake news people. But that's, you know, it's been around forever, is like all these false. I want you to talk about this, like the Dawson Academy. Tomorrow you're going to start, a course. And I want you to talk about the course. The room is packed. You shared with me this is going to be one of the largest years ever for the Dawson Academy. I want you to speak to why. And then you also shared something as crazy unique as the age demographic.
Yeah.
Like, what are you noticing?
It's tremendous. You know, I started teaching with the Academy as an associate faculty in 2009. And when I first started, I would say that probably about 80 to 85% of our dentists that were coming through the Academy at that point in time were dentists that were probably in practice 15 plus years. A very small percentage would be dentists that were in practice 5 years or less. And today, it's completely flip-flopped. About 80% of our new customers that are coming through our 7-course core curriculum have been in practice less than 5 years.
What's your hypothesis?
Well, gosh, I'm fascinated by this because it is such a polarizing shift. You know, I don't think that many companies can look at such a dramatic polarization or flip-flop of their demographic of their customer. And so, honestly, I ask that every single time I teach a class. And, you know, I think a lot of it is that there's so much to learn to be a dentist these days that when you get done with 4 years of dental school, I think, you know, here's the reality. When you graduate from dental school, you don't pass an examination of maximum competency. You pass an examination of minimal competency. And that's what a board examination is. And I think a lot of dentists just realize when they're coming out, like, wow, there is such a deficit of things that I need to know as soon as they get into private practice. And I think the second component of that is that I think a lot of young dentists are simply just not making the money that they thought they would. And they're struggling to make ends meet because it's not uncommon that I might meet two dentists that are married and their student loan debt is over $1 million a year.
Yeah.
And then if you buy a practice or if you buy a home, you are just absolutely strapped. And if you're trying to make money in the insurance model, well, what will insurance pay for? Then you're going to have trouble making a good living these days.
Yeah. And so the reason the Dawson Academy is having a banner year, go a little bit deeper on that. I think, you know, are dentists figuring this out? Like, I got to get better, faster at discretionary things that'll pull me out of the insurance realm? Or is it just a combination of all these things?
Well, I think there's multiple things converging to produce that. I think one of them is a very common thread is that dentists come in and they want to learn to do big cases. Right. And that's awesome. You know, they realize that, you know, if you have the ability to solve bigger problems, these patients are everywhere. Yeah. You know, most patients are victims of the standard of care. You know, most patients that come in, if they're 55 or 60 years old, most of them that their mouth is in a state of continuous decline. And that's just because they're a victim of standard of care because, well, what will insurance pay for this year? You know, I've got three teeth that need to be worked on or more. And what will insurance pay for? Practically nothing. So there's a lot of young dentists out there that realize that, well, they want to do bigger cases. And I'll be honest, I don't think there's any academy in the country or the world out there that teaches how to do big cases better than we do.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you think about this, if you say, well, I want to learn to drive a car fast, like I would love to become an F1 driver or a NASCAR driver. Well, you don't just get into a car and you just tear it up. I mean, right. You've got to learn step by step. Well, how do I handle something at the very limits of physics for a car? And when you're doing a full mouth rehab on a generalized wear case, you are at the very limits of margin of error for what you do in dentistry. If you get it wrong, you're going to crash. And right. The same thing when you're driving a car 180 miles an hour. If you get it wrong, the margin of error is so small that you're going to crash. And that's what we teach. We teach you how to work up to be able to drive a car fast, but instead do bigger cases.
Okay, I want you to go back to one of my favorite words that I learned from you. I want to combine two concepts, wear and managing forces.
Yeah.
You know, like when you get out, like I didn't really get this, but like when Pete started talking about wear, like wear is a big conversation in dentistry. Now, the other thing is you can do great dentistry, but you've got to be thinking ahead about managing forces. And this is one of the things that I think you guys are in a category one. No one teaches this concept and putting all this scare. What does wear and managing forces mean to you?
Well, so you have to look at it this way, that what came in people's mouths, we don't have a restorative material better than that. We still don't. We have amazing materials, but we don't have anything better than what came in your mouth the first place. So if you've been able to destroy what nature gave you, then you can destroy what we put in your mouth even quicker.
Right.
And the margin of error is very small. So if you don't know how to manage the forces and balance the forces, we talk about one of our fundamentals that we teach, and that's what we're going to start off with tomorrow, is the five requirements of occlusal stability. And these are basically the five commandments of long-term bite health. And I've never met anybody that's having problems with their dentition from a wear standpoint, or a lot of different ways, but let's talk about wear right now. I've never met anybody that's wearing into their teeth, and that's the problem, is that, you know, when you think about the worn dentition, that's such a misnomer, because people's teeth don't wear and stop. It's a progressive issue, and it always gets worse, because once you have the dentin layer exposed, it's always going to wear 7 to 9 times faster than the surrounding enamel. So it just becomes a long-term nightmare for patients unless you get control of it. And so if you want to get control of it, you have to, number one, you have to understand from a treatment planning standpoint, how do I get the teeth into the correct three-dimensional relationship? Not only for aesthetics. Aesthetics is critical, because that's the thing that most people are attracted to, want to fix their teeth in the first place anyway. So aesthetics is important, but the way that you get teeth to look beautiful is that proper form follows function. And if you try to create a beautiful tooth and you don't get it functionally correct, most of the time it's impossible to reverse engineer a beautiful tooth to go into more of a better functional position. So form follows function, and you have to learn, well, where do the incisal edges go in space? How is this going to affect my envelope of function? How is this going to relate to my anterior guidance? And on top of that, well, how am I going to determine the proper joint position to put somebody in, which is centric relation? And it's like a big stressful word for a lot of people, because there's a lot of misinformation out there, a lot of incorrect teachings that's been associated with that. But it's the foundation of being able to build an interference-free occlusion. And if you want to restore worn dentition, that's what you need, is an interference-free occlusion.
Yeah. So tomorrow morning we start at 8 o'clock. It's a 2-day course. Can you take us through what you're going to be teaching? And then also, as the leader, give me your philosophy. Like, what do you hope to establish in 2 days if I'm an attendee?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned the top 10% course where you met Pete, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what we start off with. We start talking about, well, how can we get you into the top 10% of this profession? Because that's really the sweet spot. That's where, you know, you have the ability to kind of control your destiny. That's where you're going to make enough money that you can enjoy things outside of life and not just simply be a victim of the monster of a dental practice. So we talk about, what does it mean to be able to put yourself into that top 10%? What do you need to do? And, you know, one of the things that you need to do is you need to become a really good communicator. You need to be able to talk with your patients. You need to learn how to properly talk to your patients. You need to become a master diagnostician. You need to become a master treatment planner. And then you have to be able to have the clinical skills to do these more complicated types of cases. So we kind of start off by laying the framework of setting your brain right. You know, because one of the greatest things that Pete gave me was the proper mentality. And Pete taught us that we're in the people business, because if people don't like you and if they don't trust you, then they're not going to do dentistry with you. Like, right. who do you write a $40,000 check to that you don't like?
You have to trust
him. I do it one time a year in April. That's it, to the IRS. I mean, otherwise, I don't write big checks to people I don't like and I don't trust. So we're going to start off with that. And then we get into, what do you need to know to become a physician of the masticatory system? What are all the anatomic things that we weren't taught in dental school? How does the system work? How does the health of the joint work? How do we diagnose the joint? We're going to talk about that, because, like, I'll be honest with you, Kirk, in my community where I am, I mean, I'm in a very unenviable position to where I have a lot of people coming to me for second opinions.
Yeah.
And a lot of times these opinions are people that are in the middle of treatment and things are going sideways. And almost every single time I see a really frustrated patient and a scared dentist and, people are talking about lawyers and everything else, almost every single time I see somebody that's in the middle of a full mouth rehabilitation, everything's going sideways, patient's not comfortable, bite doesn't feel right, they're in pain. Most of it comes from that a lot of change was happening to the dentition with a disrespect for how healthy is the temporomandibular joint. Mm-hmm. Because Pete used to always say, if that joint up here is not stable and healthy, anything that you do to the teeth is not going to be stable and healthy. And right. It's going to be like a dog chasing its tail. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about how do you aesthetically build a beautiful smile. And we're going to talk step by step how you go about doing it and also build a beautiful smile, but still have it look good, but functionally correct as well.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about airway and the importance of airway, because that is going to either make or break your cases. Like my worst clinical failures that I had in my first 10 years of private practice, you know, now when I look back, oh, geez, that was an airway problem, 100%. But, you know, we just, as a profession, just in the last 15 years, I think we realized people need to breathe.
Right.
And we were never considering that. So we'll talk about airway. We're going to give tips and tricks about things that you can change in your practice right when you leave this course on Monday to change things for the better. And then a lot of the time we go through complex cases and show the treatment planning process from the diagnosis, two-dimensional treatment planning, three-dimensional treatment planning, how we manage the cases and provisionals, and how the provisionals become the blueprint for the final restorations, which is in my view is the most wonderful way that we've integrated digital technology into what we teach, is to be able to biocopy through digital scanning.
Yeah. So give our listeners the perspective. If I'm listening to this podcast and I'm a young dentist, I've never heard of the Dawson Academy. Remember those maps that are, you are here on the map at the mall. Like, give us like, what's the progression of learning in, this is the first touch or is it the second touch, and how many touches are there and do they build on each other? Like, how do you design your curriculum?
Yeah. So we have a 7-course core curriculum, and the first course is what we're going to teach tomorrow, smile design and occlusion. And we're going to start there. And then you go into a hands-on class, and that's the first one, core 2. And we call that examination records. And that's a nearly 3-day class where we show you how to do a proper examination and all the things that you weren't taught in dental school. A big part of that also is proper photography. You know, most of us don't know how to take photos correctly, you know, not only for a before and after picture, but the proper for treatment planning. And right. there's 21 different photographs at a minimum that we take on these patients that give us what the information that we need to be able to sit down and properly treatment plan a case. The in that class, you're also going to learn how to record centric relation correctly, accurately, and do it the absolute best way. Our third course is core 3, and that is our hands-on treatment planning course. So that's 2.5 days where we're going to give you actual patients with all the photos, models, mounted centric relation, and you're going to learn step by step how do we bring these puzzle pieces together in a stable bite relationship starting from centric relation, and how do we meet those 5 requirements of occlusal stability and also give them the highest possible aesthetics that you can possibly do. Our fourth class is it's core 4, and it's all about managing the bite. And mm-hmm. So it's called the art and science of equilibration. And that's kind of one of the things that really wigs a lot of dentists out, is they get really anxious when it comes to change people's bites. You know, because not everybody needs to become a full mouth rehab. There's a lot of people that you might need to do a little bit of anterior reconstruction in the front, and then you can still work with their back teeth. But how do we get them into centric relation? And that's managing the forces through an occlusal equilibration. And so we spend a lot of time in that class as well talking about splint therapy, you know, because if you find through your diagnosis that you have people that their joints aren't stable and healthy, well, how do we get them stable and healthy? You got to be able to manage that as well. And then we talk about how do you properly equilibrate splints? How do you do a class 1, class 2, class 3? And you also work up some more cases as well. Core 5 is a great course because it gives us a lot of coaching in practice management, also airway. Whit Wilkerson's, who is our health and airway expert, one of the smartest people I've ever known.
Awesome.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And he spends about half of that course going deeper down the airway road. And how do you diagnose it? If you want to treat it in your practice, what's the ethical and responsible way to go about doing that? And then we also have a lot of review of the concepts that you've been learning in the first 4 classes.
Yeah.
And then core 6 is our aesthetic course. So it's basically 2.5 days of how do I provide the highest level aesthetics that I can do? And how do I properly prep for veneers? How do I prep for 3/4 crowns? How do I prep for mini crowns? What material should I use? Bonding techniques, managing perio interfaces, which is a huge part of aesthetics. So that's a big component of that class as well. And then our final class is our graduation course, and it's called Advanced Problem Solving. And it's basically 2.5 days of me and my other faculty, and we get up there and we just show the most difficult cases that we've done over our careers and show the highlights, some of the lowlights, and just show you when you start to get into these orthodontic combination cases, how do you manage people that have a skeletal type of issue?
Yeah.
And we just basically show everybody the most difficult things that we've done and show them how we manage that as well. And so most of our clients, it takes them about a year to year and a half to get through those 7 courses. But when you come out of it, you know more than 99% of the dentists that are practicing dentistry.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I'm so proud of you, man. You're doing such great things. You've been an educator for how many years?
Yeah, the first time I did a full day CE course on my own was in 2005. So I've been doing it now for 20 years.
20 years. And you're how old, can I ask?
I'm 51.
So I'm 55. I want you to give our listeners perspective. How has education changed in the time that you've been an educator? Anything come to mind? Like, yeah, well, you've watched the evolution of it. Like, how has it changed?
Well, I'll tell you, when I started off taking CE, everything was about aesthetics. It was, you know, the dentistry was emerging from the aesthetic revolution where it became predictable to bond things to front teeth. And it wasn't always that way. And it's funny because, you know, young dentists, they don't know the history of like the struggles that we've gone through to get where we are today, to have the convenience of things that we have in dentistry from a material standpoint and from a predictability standpoint. So everything at that point in time was, everything was, how do you prep veneers? How do you bond veneers in? Everybody was being diagnosed with an acute porcelain deficiency, right? So if you didn't have a veneer in your tooth, you're done for. And then really what that did was bring us back to the golden age of occlusion, because there were just so many failures that dentists were experiencing with chipping incisal edges and debonding veneers and giving patients phonetic speech problems. I mean, you want to talk about a nightmare, is you give somebody a speech impediment,
right,
and they just wrote you a check for 20 grand. You got yourself a real problem.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, as dentistry has evolved in a CE standpoint over the years, now it's the marriage of aesthetics and function. How do we put those two things together? How do we meet both of them and give the respect to both sides of that coin? And how do we do it predictably? Because the real thing, Kirk, in dentistry, and you know this, is that if what you're doing is not predictable, it's not profitable. Because if you got to replace dentistry, you're losing all your profit. And it doesn't take many hiccups or failures for you to completely lose all the profit on a case. So that's one of the most important things that we teach by teaching dentists how to do this the right way, is giving you predictability, and that gives you profitability. And that's when dentistry becomes fun. And that's when you have patients that are happy. And when you have happy patients, then they're sending you other patients that they want to be happy as well. And that's what's great, is when you become kind of that go-to person in your community, the problem solver in your community, then people come to you.
Yeah.
And when you were saying earlier, they say, well, if you're a young dentist, like, what's this mean? Well, you know, remember that the thing I constantly tell my young dentists in the crowd is, you come into a course like this and your brain goes into sprint mode and you forget that you're running a marathon.
Right.
And I just tell everybody, look, you got to think about your career in 5-year chunks, because 5 years goes by so quickly. And, you know, you and I are in our 50s. We know that now for me, a month feels like maybe a week or 10 days. Like, I can't believe it's almost the middle of August. I don't know where this year went.
Yeah.
And every year it goes quicker and quicker and quicker, and it means more. So you've got to think about meaningful changes. You know, there's ways that you can make instant changes in your practice, but meaningful changes take time.
Yeah.
Because what that requires is self-improvement on your end. And that requires self-improvement on your staff as well. Because if they don't, what I always tell people, Kirk, is when you leave this class, one of the first things you need to do is you need to sit down with your staff and you need to tell them what you learned and why it's important. What's the benefit for the patient? And now what's the benefit going to be for our practice? Because if your hygienist or your office staff, if they can't have a meaningful conversation with a patient on the philosophy of care, then the baby goes out with the bathwater, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they have to have a technical ability to like maintain what you've been saying, but they need to have a philosophical knowledge base for them to be able to make sure that continuity exists no matter who that patient is interacting with. And all these things take time. Plus you have to develop the clinical skills. You know, you just can't, if you want to drive a car 180 miles an hour, you don't hop in there. You got to work your way up and learn how to manage these cases.
Yeah, I totally agree. I want you to go back to something you said earlier. You used the phrase golden age of dentistry. Totally agree.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean to you?
The golden age of dentistry just means, like, how do we meld aesthetics and function together?
Right.
And how do we do it predictably? Because, you know, we have such a challenging array of problems that patients can come into, whether it's a dentalism and they want all on whatevers, or when you have combination cases of natural teeth with implants, if you have a removable on that they want to keep something, there's so many different variations of people that we can treat. And, you know, you have some people that are obviously a much more higher functional risk. And
Right. Well,
how do you manage those people if they're a higher functional risk? Well, what material should you use and not use? I mean, that's really the golden age, is being able to have one of those flow charts of, like, okay, I've got this problem. You know, how do I work my way down into what the final solution should be? What's best for the patient? And the good news in dentistry today is that we have the luxury of a lot of times having multiple ways that we can solve a problem for a patient. Now, there's always going to be a best way, and there's always going to be compromises. And our job, you know, when you earn the title doctor, it's educator. So your job is, through diagnosis and treatment planning, is to provide a patient with options. And if you can give them the options, and if there is a compromise, if they own the compromise of not choosing to do what's best, then our job is to support the patients on whatever is the best choice for them.
Okay, you're my friend, so we're going to go there. I hate fake news when you see all this crap on the internet, like private practice is going away, DSOs are taking over, you know, speak to that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the luxury that we have in our profession, is you can do whatever you want to do. And right. if you don't want to run your own practice, I mean, running your own practice is difficult.
It is.
It's time consuming. There's a lot of things you need to know. And honestly, I meet a lot of people that are like, I just don't have the personality or the appetite to want to own my own practice.
Yeah.
Great. That's why you can be an associate. And, you know, it's interesting that, you know, the DSO market, for the most part, now we interact with a lot of DSOs at the Dawson Academy, and we train DSOs. And I've met DSO owners that their DSO is fee for service. And they're kind of the exception. And most DSOs they're trying to leverage their contracts with insurance companies and also manage costs by having contracts with suppliers, laboratories, dental suppliers. And so they are supplying a market. You know, when you think about the restaurant industry, you have McDonald's and you have Michelin starred restaurants.
Right.
And both of those are serving the market in a different way. You know, right. There's something like, I can't remember the exact number, but something like over 2 billion people a day get one of their meals from McDonald's every day.
Wow.
It's incredible. Now, they're obviously serving a very important need, because not everybody desires or not everybody has the ability to pay for a Michelin-starred meal. Now, there are people out there that want that. And then there's everything in between Michelin and McDonald's. And, you know, for the most part, even though a lot of DSOs, their business model is to leverage their contracts with insurance companies, that's okay. But what I'll tell you is that there's never been a better time to be in an independent private practice if that's something that you want, because Right. There are a tremendous number of people that want to be taken care of just a little bit better. They want to be, you know, they want to walk in and feel like they're not just a number. They want the same office manager to be there every time they walk in, and the same hygienist, and they don't want to walk in and every time it's a different dentist.
Yeah.
That's there. And, you know, a lot of times the patients that go to a DSO and they decide it's not for them and they come to see me, that's their biggest complaint, is that they don't want dentistry enrolled by one dentist, and they show up and that dentist is no longer there. There's enough people out there that want continuity of their care.
Right.
And it's a great time to become the person that has the ability to solve big problems, because there's a big demand for that.
Totally agree. I love your perspective on it too.
I don't want to villainize any choice that a dentist makes.
Yeah, and I totally agree.
Period. Because that's the beauty of being a dentist in this country is you can do whatever you want to do. And if that's what you want to do, then I support you 100% of the way.
Yeah, and you're such a good person, and you're going to you're helping me reevaluate my question, because I totally agree with you, you know, and I get fueled by this fire when people say I can't own my own practice. And you're right. Some people, that is their thing. Some people, it's not their thing. And whatever you choose, it's the path for you. And I'm just a strong defender of there's nothing better than making your own rules about when we start, what we do. Like, I think a lot of people chose dentistry because of this freedom word. Like, I get to choose.
Yeah.
I can choose what to practice, when to, don't you agree?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I meet dentists that they sold their practice to a DSO and they think it's the best thing they ever did and they would do it all over again. And I meet other dentists that it was the worst decision they ever made and they wouldn't do it over again.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, there's just a variety of things out there, and if it's the right thing for you, it's the right thing for you. And it's simple as that. I wonder in my mind, how sustainable the growth of the DSOs are going to be, because they're going to run out of the baby boomers that want to sell their practice, or,
right. You
know, there was that certain jump right after COVID where a lot of people decided to sell their practices. And so, I mean, well, the future will tell, but there's never been a better time to be a dentist.
Amen, brother.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so proud of you. You're my friend, and I have 20 more questions, but you have to teach a course for the next 2 hours. So I got to be respectful of that. You use the term 5-year chunk. I love that. What's your next 5-year chunk for Lenny Hess, Dr. Lenny Hess?
Gosh, you know, the one of the greatest gifts that has been given to me, and I'll tell everybody when we take this course tomorrow, is that this course that I'm going to teach tomorrow, when I sat in it in 2003 or four, I can't remember the year. I think it was 2003. It completely altered the trajectory of my life. And it gave me the little kick in the rump to push me in the direction that I knew I wanted to go, because I wanted to make sure that I had control of my life. And the blessing that I've had by becoming a complete care dentistry is I've been able to do so many things in my life that I never imagined. You know, I grew up poor. I grew up in a very dysfunctional family. You know, I drank powdered milk. I remember a time when we were on government assistance, and, you know, there are just so many things that I get to experience in life that dentistry provided that for me. And so for me, you know, the next 5 years, well, I want to keep doing what I'm doing, and which is continuing to have this amazing privilege to lead this academy. And, you know, continue to help to change the trajectory of other people's lives that they're ready to be changed. So nothing's going to change for me in the next 5 years. But, you know, there are certain things. Like, I've gone through phases of things that I've been interested in over my lifetime. You know, learning to play golf. You know, I've been able to own and fly my own airplane for over 10 years. And that was like such a blessing, because that was like a childhood dream. Travel, go to countries that I want to visit. And, you know, one of the greatest luxuries that I have is I have a beautiful little lake cottage that I go out to on the weekends if I'm home, and to be able to spend time there. I mean, that's just what I want to maximize my enjoyment of life, because we only get one go around, don't we? None of us are getting out of this alive. And, you know, I just want to make sure that when I come home from the office, that I'm the best version of myself for my loved ones, right? Because for me, the most important thing is life are the people that I have close, intimate relationships with. That's the most important thing.
Amen.
And the second thing is to make sure that, you know, my practice is supporting my life, that I have the balance to do the things that I want to do by taking care of other people, and that I have enough to take care of myself, because you can't pour from a half empty cup. And those are the times when I get a little crunchy, because we were talking before we came on air that, you know, I'm on the road about 100, 120 days a year. And, you know, sometimes you can get into a real busy 4 or 5 week stretch where, you know, you don't have the time to do the things that kind of like fill you up outside of work and inspiring other people. So that's my next 5 years. I just want to make sure that I get to do the things that I've always dreamed I wanted to do.
I love it, buddy. So good, man. One last question.
Yeah.
Speak to the 32-year-old dentist who's listening to this that doesn't think like, this is the greatest future. What, if I had some time with Lenny Hess, what would he tell me?
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's what we're going to talk about for the next 2 days is, is there's never been a better time to invest in yourself.
Right.
You know, there is a lot of times, you know, it's applicable to anything. People say, well, what's the right time to get married? Well, we'll get married. There's never a right time to get married,
isn't.
Right? What's going to be the right time to have kids? Well, there's there no isn't. Such thing, right? And, you know, what's the right time to invest in myself as Dennis? Now. There is no better time than now, because honestly, when we do get those dentists that come in, Kirk, that are 15, 16 years in practice, and now they're just getting exposed to this now, they're like living with like this tremendous regret that they don't have, because they're looking around and they're like, all these dentists have been out of school for 4 or 5 or 6 years. We get so many that graduated a year or less. It's bonkers. It really is bananas. And they're looking and they're like, so I think they're envious of the fact that, wow, you get 15 years that I didn't get to like right. be able to change your practice. So you can be in control. I think a lot of dentists feel like they're not in control. And if you want control, the way that you get control is by not being afraid to invest in yourself.
Dude, so well said.
Thank you.
You're the best, man. Thank you for being here, brother.
You're the best.
No, you're the best.
This is a great podcast, except if you look over my shoulder back there, I got this creepy eye looking right at me.
There's a picture, for those of you who are listening to the audio version, there's a picture of Bob Margis.
Brilliant dentist. One of the nicest guys I've ever known.
Yeah, it's one of those projects. I've never finished anything. Thank God I have a great team around. But my goal, if you're not watching the video version of this, is like I wanted to pimp our, I don't know if that's a good word. Like I wanted to like put all these photos of all these people that inspired me. And I got started with one, and your photo is going to be up here shortly. And, you know, I got Pigpen and my son up here. But like I got work to do. So Lenny, when you come back, I'm going to finish the project. How's
awesome.
That?
Sounds good. Well, Kurt, thanks for having me. You know, you're such an inspiration. The impact that you made on dentistry is tremendous. I just always relish the time that we get to do things like this. So thanks so much for having me.
Amen, brother. We're going to do many, many more. So stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for listening to the Best Practices Show. If you weren't taking notes, don't worry. This is how the podcast works. You can flip up to the notes section. Whether you're listening to Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, everything that Lenny and I talked about, it's going to be listed in the notes. You're going to see links to the Dawson Academy. You'll see links to follow Lenny. Just do it. Check it out. I promise you, you'll love it. And if you have questions, you can always reach out to Lenny. He's a very incredible, like giving human being. So make sure you check that out. So, gosh, I don't know what else to say other than thank you guys for listening. Thanks for watching. Until we see you guys next time.
See you down the road.
We'll see you down the road. So hope you guys have a great day. We'll see you soon.
Cheers.
Cheers. So there you have it. Another great episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And thank you for showing up. I just want to thank you for being here and sharing the good word with your friends. And if you're really enjoying the podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go to wherever you consume the podcast and just give us a 4 or 5 star review? Here's what that does. It allows us to find other great people like you. I love this profession so much. I'm going to spend the rest of my professional life finding great information so that you can consume it and your friends can consume it so that you can create a better practice and a better life. So keep spreading the word, and we will see you guys soon. Have a great day, everybody.